Blog Talk Radio.
Game down on the plains. Hopefully he will be calling in with a live report. Currently halftime, and Bama is up by 10 against a very bad Auburn basketball team. Of course, all of that is overshadowed today by the what many Bama fans now consider, if not the best holiday of the year, certainly in the top three, replacing Christmas and Halloween for some of us. One of those days, like when the kids, how old do I sound now? When the halo comes out and the kids, you know, skip school or call out sick to work. A lot of the old timers call in sick to work on National Signing Day and sit around and watch ESPNU. If you're listening to the show live tonight, that means you have not fulfilled your quota of recruiting news and are looking to Thomas and I to fill the gap, and fill the gap we shall. Thomas, how was your signing day?
My signing day was busy. I was running over at Bama Hammer. We had a live blog going, and we had player profiles that Tony and I were hammering on all afternoon, but it was a good time.
Good.
As I sit now, my celebration, I am actually off to a Mardi Gras ball after the radio show. So I am in tails doing this show. So we're royalty on BAMs for Bama fans. So I decided to look the part for once.
Well, talk about Beauty and the Beast. We've got Tuxedo Thomas in tails, and then we've got Blip over here with a half case of Pabst Blue Ribbon.
You probably had a better time during the day, but I'll catch up with you this evening.
I'm sure you will.
Bars.
Anyway. You know, I read somewhere on the internet today, which means it's true, that in Japan, Pabst Blue Ribbon is considered a premium beer and costs something ridiculous, like $60 a case.
That's painful.
I know, right? But in my many years of touring in bands, PBR was always the free band beer. I acquired an affinity for it. And so now it is the champion's beer that I toast Nick Saban and the Alabama Crimson Tide. Another, you know, it's almost blasé at this point, another national championship in recruiting.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned another, because if you look at, you know, Alabama was number one on Rivals and number one on 247, and I believe they're number one on ESPN as well, but 247 and Rivals are like, ho-hum, they won another national title in recruiting. Damn it, we've written this 3 years in a row. What other superlatives do we have for this team? So I got a kick out of that.
And yet you've got that one rogue website out there with scouts saying that we're fourth. I mean, really, Bama fans need to get some kind of petition going to boycott Scout. No, I kid. If
somewhere Kerry Clark is jumping around screaming at you.
I know, it's great. I love it. So we'll start with Scout, where Kerry works, and BamaMag.com, BamaMag top feature, BamaMag TV, wrapping up signing day with features on the front page of Alvin Kamara, Reuben Foster, and D. Liner. Really, as far as signing day surprises, if you read any of the Bama message boards, and have invested even a modicum of your time in keeping up with the staff and our recruiting efforts, not any huge surprises today. It kind of went down the way most people predicted. 7 p.m. Central Time was really the last announcement that could have had an impact on Alabama, and that was Eddie Vanderdoes announcing that he was going to go to Notre Dame. So a couple people still had their fingers crossed on that one, but I'm very pleased with the way we closed today and finishing at the top of 3 out of 4 of the major recruiting websites' rankings doesn't hurt my feelings. In fact, I seem to remember reading that on Rivals.com that this Bama class, this 2013 signing class, broke the record for overall points. And I know that you kind of have an idea because you're nerdy like that of how the points work and the systems and the math, but I just found that to be interesting as somebody who has, you know, paid my $10 a month to Rivals for a long, long time. As long as I followed that website, that according to them, this is the best group of high school prospects ever.
Yeah, I read that too, and mathematically it's absolutely correct. The formula is, the only reason Alabama is not number one on Scout is Scout takes the top 25 prospects, whereas I know Rivals only takes the top 20, and I think ESPN only takes the top 20, and then 247 just is probably the bar none best in my mind. But Alabama has to factor in Cole Mazza and Parker McLeod, who are far lower rated than some of the lower rated guys in other classes. That's not to say that Cole Mazza is bad or McLeod is bad either. I had to scout both of them recently just to see what the heck what they're bringing to the table. It's just, you know, 2-star guys at the bottom end of the class has an absurdly adverse effect. If you look at even how scouts rankings go, Alabama has the most 5-stars. They have the most top 100 kids. So scouts horribly misleading, if you ask me, but it's Kerry's stuff and I respect scout for the work they do. So go scout too. Alabama's still number 3.
Well, scout, if I understand correctly, and this is, boy, only an Alabama fan would get their panties in a twist over this kind of stuff, right?
Scout, I'm glad to have this problem. Thank you.
I know. Absolutely. Scout factors into their math when they do their rankings. A part of their ranking system, they try to factor in how well a team covered positions of need. So you may get, you know, if you've got no returning defensive ends and you sign a 5-star defensive end, that might count more for your school than Alabama signing a 5-star defensive end when we've already got 4- and 5-star kids coming back that have already seen starting time.
Also correct. But again, at this point, you're splitting hairs. Alabama
right.
has a historically excellent class, no matter how you slice it.
Well, let's start, because I do want to talk about I want to talk about them all. There's outside of the basketball game, really, it's recruiting. We talk about it every week. Let's just bathe in it tonight, and hopefully you guys get a kick out of it. We will open the phone lines early tonight. If you have any observations, any thoughts, any inside info, any gossip, any criticisms, just lay it all out there. Let's get it all off our chest tonight on BAMS Radio. According to Rivals, I found this interesting. Rivals has Anthony Averett as our lowest rated prospect. They rate him as an athlete, plays cornerback and wide receiver, primarily wide receiver. And what's interesting to me about that is that of all the 40-yard dash of this incoming class, Anthony ran the fastest.
Good so lord, 6'1"? That's rather intense.
6'1", 175, and he runs. He's just on the brink of breaking the 4.4 barrier. So he ran a true 4.4 40 time, extremely fast, and a little bit out of our normal footprint in that he's a New Jersey kid. So Averett, and then the two jump out at me at the bottom of the list. I think most of the websites had Walker Jones, the youngest of the three of Barrett Jones, Harrison Jones. He's the youngest of the three brothers Walker Jones at middle linebacker, three-star prospect. Cole Mazza, the long snapper, who, interestingly, Cole Mazza, of that group of the lower-rated prospects according to the websites, probably has the best chance to start of any of these freshmen. I mean,
he will.
You've got Carson Tinker leaving, and it's Mazza's job to lose, right? As a specialist.
Absolutely. That is true.
So that's hilarious to me. Parker McLeod, early enrollee, already on campus learning the playbook at the quarterback position. But Rivals has Eddie Jackson, the one of the more recent commitments to the Crimson Tide, rated as a three-star wide receiver. Here's where we start to see some of that discrepancy between the websites and how they evaluate and how they rank, because 24/7 has Eddie Jackson as a four-star cornerback prospect, and I am reasonably certain that we have recruited him and that Nick has gotten in Eddie Jackson's ear that he will play corner for the Crimson Tide. I don't think wide receiver is anywhere near this young man's future. And from the 24/7 staff, Tim Watts had indicated that had Jackson been more active in the summer camps, in the evaluation circuit, that this kid could have easily been a five-star talent. He just doesn't have a lot of film. People haven't had a chance to evaluate him. And that's why you see some of the three- and four-star ratings. But Tim said, no, look out for this kid. Eddie is the real deal, can absolutely ball, and is going to be in the rotation. Tim thinks he'll be in the two-deep rotation for cornerback come the spring.
Well, and I believe if you go back and listen to previous shows, Kerry also said that Eddie Jackson is a legitimate talent, even though – you know, he is, if you look at him, look at his star ratings, which of course is not the best way to look at a player, but if you look at his star ratings, he's not all that in a bag of chips. But, you know, Kerry backs up exactly what you said. I think it will be interesting because he's tall. He's a tall corner. And as long as he's fleet of foot, you're talking instant chance to play, even if it's just on outside trying to keep up with go routes and whatnot.
I'm using the Rivals rankings here to work from the bottom up. The next one up that I want to talk about, who is every recruiting class needs beef. You got to have in the SEC, you got to have the big boys to play. And this was actually a commitment from last year's recruiting class, didn't make grades and went to Hargrave Military. And we've got a, how shall I put this politically correctly, an interesting past with Hargrave as far as Alabama's relationship. And more specifically, Ole Miss has an interesting relationship with Hargrave Military Academy. Brandon Hill, the big offensive lineman, 6'6". They're listing him at 350. Now, as of December, Brandon had gotten up close to 400 pounds. I understand that he slimmed back down, and he's expected to report around 365. So 6'6", 365, big, mean streak kind of offensive lineman that most project on the inside, will probably play guard and will probably be one of the kids coming out of the JUCO ranks that gets in the rotation competing for that spot that Chance Warmack will be vacating. And then one of the feel-good stories of the recruiting class, I mean, you got to root for him. Three-star kid out of Spanish Fort, Alabama. Had a pretty nice offer list, but not an elite offer list. He wasn't being chased down by the Ohio States and the USC's and the Alabamas and the Floridas of the world. But Jonathan Cook, man, if you follow the young man on Twitter, if you've read the story, this is a kid that grew up an Alabama fan. It is his lifelong dream to play for the Crimson Tide. And his performance at the invitation camps on campus in Tuscaloosa, his performance in his senior year, his performance in the playoffs in high school for the Spanish 14, earned him that scholarship offer. which he jumped on. He decommitted from another school, switched his commitment to Alabama, and tweeted today when he sent his letter of intent in that, "Today, my lifelong dream comes true, Roll Tide." And that's got to give you chill bumps.
Oh, yeah. His story is excellent. He, through his play, like you said, he campaigned for an offer, and he finally got the offer that he was after at the Alabama-Mississippi All-Star Game because he had a great week. You know, simply put, against the best competition, he had a great week. And I think he decommitted from Nebraska.
Right.
And even if he never plays a down at Alabama, which I think he's going to earn his way in at some point, it's a great story. And you want to talk about an ambassador for the university? Yeah, that would be a kid that you would probably look at for something like that.
So we've got we mentioned Cole Mazza, the long snapper out of California, on the offensive line. Brandon Hill, the JUCO offensive lineman. One more three-star JUCO offensive lineman, Leon Brown out of New York, also 6'6", 315. A lot of people saying that they see a little bit of, and of course I'm going to brain fart on his name, left tackle out of the JUCO ranks, first-round draft pick for the Seattle Seahawks. Why can't
James
I
Carpenter?
James Carpenter, there's the one.
That's what you got me.
A lot of people saying that they see some James Carpenter in him, probably because of the JUCO parallels. Also because at 6'6", 315, most people would probably project him inside. But true tackle prospect, they like his technique, and he will be in the running to replace DJ Fluker at that right tackle position. So three of the offensive line commit in the three-star slots. There, we are right at about a quarter after. Thomas, are you ready to roll us a break and we'll take a breather real quick and we'll come back and we'll talk about the four-star kids that committed to Alabama in this recruiting cycle?
Well, actually, I think Carrie's on the line. If we could just plow.
We'll skip the break and go straight to Carrie then, by all means.
Carrie, is that you? I think I recognize your number.
I think you do.
I recognize the number. Carrie Clark, ladies and gentlemen. Carrie, how you doing this evening?
Oh, it's been a long day, man.
I feel your pain.
I can't imagine why.
And if the basketball team doesn't pick it up, it's going to be an even longer day.
Well, I am. But
it's been a good day
football-wise. I'm showing us up by 7 still down on the plains with 16 left to go, 16 minutes left in the second half.
Up by 4 with 15:50.
Well, damn you, ESPN.
Well, I'm watching it live while I talk to you.
Still, this is
a corner three, Auburn rebounds, and here they come with a chance to cut it to even lower.
Well, Carrie, we have been working our way from the bottom of the rankings upward, talking about Cole Mazza's opportunity to start early, Eddie Jackson possibly being a little bit underrated, what a great story Jonathan Cook is. And the absolute blazing wheels of Anthony Averett. Anybody on the bottom of the rankings that you saw commit today that you think has a chance to maybe peel somebody's eyes back and surprise some folks?
Well, that's a great question. I think Parker McLeod is a better player than people are giving him credit for. I've seen a lot of people question why Alabama took Parker McLeod, when they took him, and why they took two quarterbacks. And now, granted, when Parker McLeod's commitment was taken, Alabama didn't have any idea that Luke Del Rio, a three-star, was going to walk on. They had no clue. This was not even in the works at all when they took Parker's commitment. But the reason that they took Parker McLeod's commitment when they did was he came into camp and just really lit it up. Showed the Alabama coaching staff that he could play SEC football the way they wanted to play, and that was why he got his offer. That, you know, combined with, like I said earlier, they didn't have any idea that Luke Del Rio was going to walk on. But Parker McLeod, I think, is a guy that's not getting enough credit. I don't think Tyron Jones is getting enough credit. Alabama coaches that scouted him on film and in person felt like they were watching an exact clone of Mark Ingram, which is pretty high praise. So, you know, a couple of guys. you know, there really weren't any guys that they took other than those and the ones you mentioned that were even questionable. I mean, most everybody they signed had multiple offers, multiple high D1 offers. So it is, once again, a consensus number one recruiting class. I think that in the final rankings, Scout will be the only one that doesn't show them one, but Scout, I think, has them up to three now. But everybody else has them one, so it's a consensus recruiting national championship, once again, for Nick Saban. And the thing that jumped out to me about Nick Saban's remarks were that he spent the majority of his day-to-day working on the 2014 class. So but that's just Nick Saban for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I don't think any surprises. I don't think anybody walked away from signing day saying, wow, I didn't see that coming, with maybe the one exception, just because it was a story that broke late. If you haven't been on top of recruiting for the past 2 weeks, you could have blinked and missed it. And that was and help me, is it A'shaun or A'shaun?
I think it's A'shaun Robinson. That's a really interesting story.
If you missed it, the video of A'shaun committing, he had somebody, I don't know if it was a buddy or a teammate, walk across the stage at the high school in head-to-toe elephant costume and hand him an Alabama hat. It was one of the funnier and more dramatic signing day announcements, and five-star kid on most websites. What's interesting, I think, and what has a lot of Bama fans scratching their beards a little bit, is you've seen him listed at defensive tackle on some websites. Some have him listed at offensive tackle. Kerry, do you have any inkling as to where the staff's head is on where they feel like Robinson fits? Are they going to start him on the O-line or the D-line?
I think they're going to start him on the D-line and then go from there. I heard an interesting story today about A'shaun. One of the things that really impressed the coaches, they already knew he was a good football player because they'd seen plenty of film on him, but they didn't realize how athletic he was. All these football players, first off, think they're great basketball players. So Coach Saban has a goal at his house, and sometimes the recruits get involved in shooting around stuff when they go out to his house as part of their official visit. Well, A'shaun showed up to Coach Saban's house with shorts and flip-flops on, and at this point, the goal was jacked up to 10'6", and he dunked on it easily. And that's when Chris Rump told Saban, I got to have this guy.
Well, he certainly passes the eye test at 6'5", 304. He's a big boy. And every photo that I've seen of him, he's not quite scowling, but you can almost tell just from the photo that he's got that mean streak. He's got that nasty that you need out of a nose tackle. Pretty strong, I think, on the D-line. Let's stick with the D-line. A'shaun Robinson, of course, probably the premier. The other recent development as far as recruiting is the love affair with D-liner. We can finally put to bed D-liner signing with the Tide today, sending his letter of intent. A lot of people had him at defensive tackle. I think in high school he played defensive tackle. But currently on most websites, they've moved him to defensive end at 6'2", 274. And, Kerry, if I recall a couple of weeks back, you said he reminds you a little bit of Damian Square and more of that defensive end edge rusher in Alabama scheme.
He does, and actually probably a slightly more athletic version of Damian Square. No knock on Damian. I think he'll probably make him the pros. Alabama has a way of coaching guys up that way. But what I like about D is that he plays sideline to sideline. He's got a good motor. I really didn't find there to be a lot of drama in his announcement. He flipped probably 2 months ago. He just wanted to keep it private and have his own little ceremony today. There was a lot more drama in the Reuben Foster announcement, but we'll get to that later. But, yeah, D's a very athletic guy. I think he's more of a defensive end. But at Alabama, they like me to know more than one position. And while he probably won't see any action at nose guard, they're going to expect him to know end and tackle both.
And we've got a couple of guys that I will classify as tweeners that some sites list as outside linebacker, some list as defensive end. We'll get to them in a minute. Let's talk about the last true, no question about it, defensive lineman in this class, and that's Darius Page. Reminds me a lot body-wise of Darren Lake from last year's class.
Oh, he's not as thick as Darren, but both of them are very athletic. Height and weight-wise, Page is really fairly similar to Liner, maybe a little heavier, but it's not night and day. Just another very athletic guy who knows how to clog the middle. And, again, I don't think he's a nose guard, but he's an athletic end that'll help. And they really, really, you know, the nose guard of the class is Achon. They just, but they got a lot of parts they needed filled on the defensive line today.
Well, let's talk about two very, very highly rated prospects that are listed on some sites defensive end, on some outside linebacker. Sometimes you see them as a five-star, sometimes you see them at four-star. And that is, we'll start with the kid from Louisiana. And that's, where is he on my list?
Tim Williams.
Tim Williams. Tim Williams at 6'4", 230, probably maybe a little bit light to classify him as a defensive end, but you put 10 or 20 pounds on him, or he ends up playing that Jack linebacker spot. And then the other is Jonathan Allen. And Jonathan Allen, coming in at 6'3", 255, certainly has the ideal size to play Jack.
That's what they're telling him. But they've got an embarrassment of riches at Jack right now. You got Xavier Dixon. You got Damon Duvall. There's a lot of guys at Jack right now. And a lot of recruits are being told they're going to be Jacks. Some of them are, and some of them are going to be bulked up and put a defensive end. And even a few more may actually be moved over to Sam linebacker, the other outside linebacker position, because that's going to be vacated next year. I'm not sure right now who they have in mind to take over the Sam linebacker position after the graduation of our I can't remember his name now. But anyway, that position will be graduated. And, you know, the Jack and the Sam are different because the Sam has to play more pass coverage, but Allen seems athletic enough to do that. There's some of those guys. Now, Williams, I think he might be bulked up and put it in. I don't know if he's going to be a Jack or not. It's possible. It's possible he could be maybe redshirted and taught to play the Jack. I don't rule anything out, but certainly a very impressive guy. And Coach Saban had a quote today about the desire to sign more twitch muscle pass rushers, because so many people are running spread offenses, and I think that Williams definitely fits that role.
No question. Some Bama fans, not that we have any lunatics in the fan base, Kerry, but some Bama fans really went off the deep end today with disappointment over our lack of ability to sign a true safety when Von Bell. Many thought throughout the process Alabama led. Von Bell ends up going to Ohio State. And then Tony Connor, of course, ends up going to Ole Miss. So a lot of people felt like we whiffed at the safety position. I might caution those that feel that way to go back and watch the film when he played on the defensive side of the ball of Ardarius Stewart. And I'm curious to hear, Kerry, whether you feel like Stewart will end up at wide receiver or at safety, because he seemed to excel in the high school ranks at both.
Well, they're telling him wide receiver. But when they played the Alabama, the Alabama-Mississippi All-Star game in Montgomery, he played exclusively safety that week. So Ardarius has the power to do either or. I was very disappointed on the Connor thing, simply because I thought this was the year Alabama was going to break the curse in Batesville, South Panola High School, and even had sources and information, and as late as midnight last night, that it was going to be Alabama, but something changed. and it changed to the negative. So that was my biggest disappointment today. And that is the sole reason that Alabama had 26 slots up on the board. I think they knew last night they were not getting Vanderdoes. But I think they woke up this morning thinking they were going to get Tony Connor. They did everything above board you can possibly do to get a kid. But Ole Miss's recruiting tactics, which are coming under question nationwide now, were just too much to overcome.
Free tires for life, baby.
Well, you mentioned recruiting tactics. You mentioned recruiting tactics. Kerry, and this is a former Auburn. I work with a former Auburn letterman who shall remain nameless, but he's very connected in and around the Auburn program and throughout the SEC. And he said to me that in order to get Laramie Tunsil, Ole Miss offered like his sister, his girlfriend, and some of his girlfriend's friends scholarships to random athletic programs. Do you have any information on that? I haven't been able to corroborate that source at all, and I don't want to start throwing mud just on one guy's word.
Too late.
Oops.
I heard today that they had offered his brother, that's a 2014 kid, a football player that I've never heard of. I did hear today, but there's much more to it than that. Ole Miss is treading on some dangerous waters when it comes to rewarding kids, even just for taking official visits, much less signing with them. They're really, you know, and they're also doing some other things besides that that have gotten them on probation in the past regarding employees from Memphis establishments being bussed over and all that. I don't want to go into any details, but they are really, really sinking to new depths at Ole Miss.
Is that Hugh Freeze's initiative?
He knows about it.
Okay.
You know, he's as guilty as Mike DeBose ever was.
Well,
we were doing similar things.
All right. Well, let's. This is not an Ole Miss show. This is an Alabama show. Not an awful lot of drama. I mean, most of the letters of intent came in early. I was very pleased, given down the stretch there was some drama with the announcement of Robert Foster from Pennsylvania. You know, feeling kind of like mom maybe wanted him to end up at Pitt. So that was one of those letters of intent that I sweated a little bit. Very, very happy to see that was one of the first letters of intent to hit the fax machine. Robert Foster, one of the top wide receivers in the nation, will come in. No question as to what position Robert will play. He's going to be a pure wideout. You had mentioned Reuben. Let's talk Reuben Foster here. And the shows up to sign his letter of intent with a Nick Saban hat on, dressed as Saban. You indicated there was a little bit more to that story on signing day. What do you know, Kerry, that Bama fans would be interested to hear?
Well, I think we should send some flowers or chocolates or something to Reese Disney for his help in recruiting Reuben Foster to Alabama.
All right. Well, you work for official sources. I don't, so I can say things with wild abandon and discuss rumors. So I'll throw something out there, and you just give a little cough if you can corroborate. Okay. The scuttlebutt around some of the message boards is that during his official visit to Auburn, Reuben Foster was recruiting another commitment or another recruit to try and join him at Alabama. And Reese Dismukes, having enjoyed a few perhaps Pabst Blue Ribbon beers that evening. Tasty adult beverages. Took umbrage to Reuben recruiting to Alabama another recruit, perhaps someone named Montravius Adams, and called him an attention whore racial expletive. Super. So, not that it will ever see the light of day, but that is a fascinating story. there are some. I tell you guys, it's a damn shame that Bama Bird had chemo tonight. I called him prior to the show in hopes that he would have enough energy to come on and for us to get his gears turning a little bit. Unfortunately, the chemo is just super, super nasty stuff. It wipes him out. But he has a good 15 or 20 minutes built up over how Dismuke's skating on the previous racial stuff that we've talked about on this show, the whole McDonald's incident, how him skating on that and having no discipline from the team or the university whatsoever, how this is pure 100% karma.
Well, I completely agree. That story is crazy, and I have faith that we'll get Bird going on this next week at minimum. Unfortunately, Bliff, I don't know if you're watching the Auburn-Bama game, but Auburn's kind of in control of this thing.
Well, so
we're on
far
an 18-2 run.
Yeah, in the second half, Auburn scored 18 points, and we've scored 3. So
that will happen.
That is disappoint.
Cam showed up at the arena, and he's got him fired up. He seriously, he's at the game.
I tell you what, guys, it's we talk about all these different websites. It is amazing to me. You would think, as accustomed to 5-star kids as we have become as Alabama fans, it wouldn't shock you to go to a website like Bama Online and look at the front page. I'm shocked. It just I click on Bama Online, and I want this to sink in. Bama Online takes a part of the real estate of their front page to feature the top 6 recruits. All 6 of Bama's recruits featured on the front page of this website are 5-star kids. We're talking about Bama signed 6 out of the top 26 kids in America. That's just not fair. A'shaun Robinson, Robert Foster, Reuben Foster, O.J. Howard, Jonathan Allen, and Derrick Henry. 2 of whom are already enrolled and taking classes.
Did y'all see the story about Derrick Henry and his push-ups?
No. I heard that. It's a good one. Go ahead, Gary.
Well, let me preface it by saying, on this show before, we talked about how Derrick Henry reminded me of Herschel Walker, and that Alabama's never had a guy like that before. Well, one of his roommates, Raheem Parkins, today said that Derrick is a freak of nature such that sometimes if Derrick is bored when he wakes up in the middle of the night, he'll just start doing push-ups. And they asked Derrick if it was true, and he said, oh, yeah, that does happen occasionally. And they say, how many do you do? And he said, just do what I can't do anymore. So here's a guy that's 6'3", 240, runs about a 4.5, and he's, waking up 3 in the morning, doing push-ups in his dorm room floor. And if you recall, Herschel Walker didn't have any formal weight training until he got to Athens. He got by with push-ups, sit-ups, and sprints. Well, I don't know where Henry stands with the sprints and the sit-ups, but just to hear that he kind of does push-ups as a hobby, and obviously that tells you that he's embraced Scott Cochran and everything he stands for, but I really am looking forward to A-Day to see Derrick Henry. I hope he gets on the second-team offense because I want to see what he does against the first-team defense. I just really can't wait to see that. It would not shock me if he had an A-Day similar to the one that T.J. Yeldon had last year.
Well, another story, since we're doing Derrick Henry stuff, Bama Hammer ran a story about a week and a half ago, right after Henry had enrolled early, and there was a Twitter exchange between him and A.J. McCarron where Derrick basically says, A.J., we need you to come throw some passes. We want to go win a title. And A.J. just goes along with it. So just to underscore your story, Carrie, stuff like that, I definitely a very bright future for that young man.
And I was assured, I know it's come up a lot of times, but I was assured today by somebody that would know that he is a running back. I've heard H-back, I've heard tight end, but that's not the way Alabama's looking at it right now. In fact, the guy they plan to move around more than anybody else they signed is Alvin Kamara. They plan to use him in a Percy Harvin type of role where they can line him up anywhere, slot, wide, tailback, whatever, and find different and creative ways to get him the ball because they've never really had a guy like that either, a guy that dynamic. Perhaps if DeHart had never been injured, he might have filled a role like that. But Alvin is bigger than Dee. Alvin is 5'11", 200, and about a 4'4". So Alvin is a guy to look forward to watching also because they're going to find a special role in the offense for Kamara. Really hasn't been a guy like that at the capstone since pre-injury pro throw. He was used a little bit like that. I recall a particular game in Columbia, South Carolina, where Prothrow lined up at tailback, wide receiver, all that. That's the way they're going to use Alvin Kamara, which I find to be very interesting and exciting as well.
Well, let's talk about the fourth horseman of the running back apocalypse. We've talked about Tyron Jones and how the staff feels like he's a Mark Ingram clone. We've talked about Derrick Henry and the push-ups and the work ethic and where he's going to end up. We've talked about Alvin Kamara. We signed four running backs in this class. Where do you see LT Tenpenny in this? Because you could watch LT Tenpenny's high school senior film and see in him a potential premier back that would be a starter for 95% of the NCAA schools as a true freshman.
Well, he's just a wonderful player. I don't really know who you'd compare him to. Maybe a slightly taller Trent Richardson, but he's just a wonderful running back, a guy that, despite Alabama fans' doubts, never wavered. His recruitment was a lot like Trent. People were acting like Trent was going to switch to Florida up until the day he signed with Alabama. You know, he'd been committed for longer than most of the people in his class, and he never wavered. He did take a visit to Florida because he lived in, you know, Pensacola, and LT did take a visit or two or three to Fayetteville, but he never wavered. He never once decommitted from Alabama. And just on a side note, I don't know if LT was ever having any doubts. My information is that he was not. But when the running back from Miami committed Monday night to Arkansas, that kind of solidified, in my mind, LT to Alabama. And then that same guy's mom ran off with his LOI today, so he couldn't sign at a press conference. I don't know. Did that guy ever sign with Arkansas later in the day?
I don't think so.
Mom ran off with his LOI at the press conference this morning down in Miami?
That's Alex Collins.
Correct.
I'm looking right now.
That has to be the strangest. You know, everybody wanted to say, I guess because of Cyrus Quanjo going on television and saying he was going to Auburn and then the fallout afterwards and the drama. I think a lot of people were looking for that kind of drama bomb this year. And the Collins commitment with Mama snatching the letter of intent and running off with it, not allowing him to sign it, that's got to be your Cyrus Quanjo weirdo moment of National Signing Day. So much so that Landon Collins actually tweeted today, "I am so glad my mama let me sign my letter of intent and go where I wanted to go." Because remember,
yep.
Landon had some mama issues too.
Yeah, I never forget the look on her face when he committed during that All-Star game. She was like, "Say what?" But that all got worked out. And now there's another brother in that family that's going to be a serious Bama prospect for the following year. A D lineman. So I can't call his name off the top of my head. His last name is not Collins, but he's got a younger brother too that's going to be a serious Alabama LSU battle.
Looking on the internet, Collins has not signed, and the name of the young man that you're thinking of is Gerald Willis, Carrie.
You're right, sir. Very good.
That's what y'all pay me the big bucks for.
Well, that's a good deal, man. You're earning it. Because I try to do show prep, but I never seem to have it in my hands.
We've talked about some of the cornerbacks. We've talked about Jonathan Cook. We've talked about Eddie Jackson. There's one cornerback that we haven't talked about, probably the highest rating-wise, the highest profile of the cornerback signees in this class, and that is Maurice Smith. Kerry, I know that Maurice has been a commitment for some time, much like Tenpenny, never wavered, never had much drama to his recruitment, pretty much picked the Crimson Tide and stuck with his guns. How do you feel about bringing Maurice in next year?
Well, he's a true cover corner, and, you know, his position coach is going to be Nick Saban. And he's got all the intangibles. I mean, it's really hard to find anything bad to say about him. What I like about him is he played in a good league in Texas, and it's not a guy that you're going to have to, worry about. Would he be able to cut it in the SEC or anything like that? I really think he's going to do a great job. And another guy that really, stuck to his guns. I appreciate it because he could have, I'm sure people have kept recruiting him to the very end. But he stuck, and I think he's got good intangibles, brings a lot to the table. I think he could contribute on special teams next year.
Wow. only a couple of current Bama players that are leading the team have done that in the very recent past, so that's a good way to start.
It is.
Well, National Signing Day, of course, everybody gets excited about the letters of intent. A lot of announcements today. Was there anybody outside of Alabama, was there anybody across the country, Kerry, that really opened your eyes, that shocked you? Like I said, there weren't a lot of drama bombs today.
The defensive end that flipped from Ole Miss to Auburn, Elijah Daniels, is that his name?
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't really see that coming. And I didn't really – I actually thought as of late last night that Auburn was going to get Montrevious Adams, but I didn't think it until the end. I thought 2 or 3 days ago that Montrevious Adams would go to maybe – Clemson. But Auburn got him. Auburn actually acquitted themselves well late in the process. I'll give them credit. The young man from New Hope, Alabama, running back Jonathan Ford, who'd been committed to Vandy for seemed like 9 months, flipped to Auburn at the last second. That surprised me a little bit. I really concentrated 95% of my efforts on Alabama. I do think that there's a little bit of shame in Athens, Georgia right now when the Dawgs only signed, I think, one of the top 10 players in their state today. That's got some people hopping mad that pulled for the old red and black.
Well, you mentioned crazy stories. The thing that jumped out at me was that Kentucky managed to flip a USC Trojan commitment. That story just... because of what it is, Kentucky football flipped a USC kid. It's just like, what? And, credit to
so
Mark
lame.
Stoops on that.
That's so lame.
Oh, yeah.
The wheels really fell off for the USC Trojans coming down the home stretch.
I mean, it's Kiffin going to Kiffin, but still, that's absolutely, even though Lane Kiffin isn't worth a box of rocks, that's still insane to me. Kentucky will never have never is not the right word. Will always be a basketball school. But
right.
They got a great guy away from USC. If I was Pat Hayden, the USC AD, and I saw that, I would be chomping at the bit to maybe get rid of Mr. Kiffin. But that's just me.
I think Kiffin was brought in there as a sacrificial lamb, kind of like Mike Shuler was at Alabama, knowing that the probation was going to hit and hit hard. And admittedly, he had a brutal last week or week and a half of the recruiting season. But from a record standpoint, I think his job is probably safe for 2 or 3 more years. Getting back to Maurice Smith, he reminds a lot of people of Leon Sandcastle.
One of the best ads from the Super Bowl, I think. Well, we focus on the letters of intent. Not a lot gets said about the kids that are a part of this class that have already enrolled. You know, we talk, of course, about the 5 stars. People are going to want to hear about Derrick Henry. People are going to talk about O.J. Howard. Sort of a forgotten hero in this class. I mean, people knock Alabama or have knocked Alabama for their lack of ability to seal the deal with a 5-star quarterback. I know he's not a 5-star quarterback, but Cooper Bateman was an Elite 11 prospect, one of the top flight kids in America as far as the pro-style QB slot is concerned. Talk a little bit about the fact that Cooper is already on campus, enrolled in classes, learning the system, going to workouts. What is Cooper going to mean to the depth at quarterback for us?
Well, nothing has officially happened yet with Philip Ealy. There's been a lot of rumors about him transferring to South Florida, but he's still at Alabama right now. But should he decide to leave, say, after the spring, and, you know, Blake Sims is a quarterback only in a certain offense that we run. So the true number two quarterback, like if, you know, a guy to start and play a whole game job, is up in the air. A lot of people give Alex Smith an advantage because he's already been there a year, but Alex ran the scout team 95% of the time. He didn't really run our offense that much. So here comes Cooper Bateman, who is a very athletic guy. I don't want to say vanilla Cam, but he can scramble. He can run the ball. But he's also got a rocket for an arm. You could call him, and I know these are strong words, but you could call Cooper Bateman a young Colin Kaepernick. He's got that kind of potential. You know, not the 23-year-old Colin, the 18-year-old Colin. I was not there for the player interview portion after Coach Saban spoke today, but the people that interviewed Cooper Bateman were blown away by how well-spoken he was and how he seemed like a leader and seemed like, you know, a quarterback when he does interviews. Much of that is attributable to the number of phone calls and interviews he did during his recruiting process, obviously. But the reporters who were there were just absolutely impressed with young Mr. Bateman's persona.
Good stuff.
So there's that.
Number 5 quarterback in the nation, according to 24/7. Number 4, if you average all the websites together. So, you know, one of the top 4 or 5 QBs in the country. Put that in your pipe and smoke it for those who say we can't close with elite talent at the quarterback position. One guy left on the list that we haven't talked about, and that's Raheem Falcons at wide receiver. 6'4", 6'5"-ish, big, tall wide receiver prospect out of New Orleans. Not really a lot said about him, but anything that you can share on him before we move on to the 9 o'clock hour, Kerry?
Just one very brief tidbit on him. He was one of the players that were allowed to be interviewed today, and my friend Chase Goodbread, who's covered Alabama for about a decade and has stood face-to-face, you know, digital recorder in hand and interviewed every wide receiver on the Alabama roster, said that unequivocally at this time, Raheem Falcons is the tallest wide receiver on the Alabama roster. Couldn't say for sure if he was 6'4", 6'4 and a half, or 6'5", but that he was definitely taller than any other receiver on scholarship right now.
Well, I actually scouted him a little bit for Bama Hammer. His film is very interesting. A lot of what it was taking advantage of that size. There was the, okay, it's first and goal from the 5. Let's snap the ball, turn the quarterback's shoulders 90 degrees, throw it into this, just way into over the moon, let Raheem Falcons go up and get it. If there's a knock on Falcons, at least from the film that I watched, is that he didn't have to fight off very much press coverage, which, given his size and his natural ability in high school, doesn't really surprise me. But if he can get used to being jammed or having to fight through a press coverage, I think he could earn his way onto the field in some level. At the very least, you're talking about a guy that is a complete pain in the rear for a defense to cover from the five, to be like, who's gonna basically throw up a jump ball if you have to. I don't think Alabama will ever have to jump ball it, but this guy shows an innate ability to high point the ball, and he can jump out of the stadium. So it's almost not fair 9 times out of 10.
Right, and the other person that they signed today that can also do that is O.J. Howard. So you don't know who's going to redshirt, who's not. The fact that they're both going through spring gives them a chance to prove themselves. There's been some talk of a couple of wide receivers from the Mobile area transferring away, scholarship guys. So, you know, if that comes to fruition, then certainly Raheem Falcons would have a chance, along with Robert Foster, to get in the rotation. And the way they're going to use O.J. Howard, I don't think it's going to be exclusively at tight end. I think he'll line up out in the slot a little bit too. So there's three guys right there, Thomas, that you could do the jump ball to should you want to.
Absolutely. I haven't had a chance to look at O.J. Howard's film as much. I knew he was an excellent player, and I just haven't done all my homework. So I do have a question for you. Given his frame, how he's built, how much weight do you think he can add to kind of become the true tight end? Because obviously at 225, he's going to have trouble blocking most linebackers and some of the bigger safeties in the SEC. But you don't want to add too much weight to him to get him to lose all that athleticism. Do you know what the sweet spot is offhand for him?
Well, for him, not offhand. Guessing, just from seeing him on tape and all, would be 20 to 25 pounds. I don't know that they ever planned for him to be the true Michael Williams blocking tight end. I think they planned for him to be the more athletic Brad Smelly H-back guy that helps on passing more so than on running. Not to say he won't have blocking responsibilities, because everybody does. But when they signed him, I think they had more of a H-back receiving tight end type role for him. I believe that he could bulk up to 250 probably. But they didn't make him block much in high school, Thomas.
I'm sure not.
Final score, Auburn 49, Alabama 37. Totally brutal second half, putting somewhat of a damper on the day, but not really when you look back at the big picture of things. I think tonight may well be the only loss that the team has in February. It was the one I was most worried about, but we don't need to dwell on basketball. I just wanted to report the facts there.
I mean, at least Alabama won at Vanderbilt for the first time in forever. So, you know.
Yeah, that was huge. That was huge.
And you called that, Gary.
Well, I called that they'd win either Tennessee or Vandy. I didn't know which one. I called that if they were ever going to do it, they'd do it this year because Vandy's so down, and they almost found a way to blow that one. Problem tonight was scoring 14 points in the second half. That's just not acceptable. I don't care if you're on the road. And Auburn's running around like they've just, you know, made the Final Four. But they had lost five in a row to Alabama, and they found a way to get it done. But anyway, whatever, 12-point loss on the road to Auburn. Going to have to bounce back against a very down LSU team at home Saturday, and I'm confident Alabama will do that. But this loss tonight certainly puts a big damper on the NCAA hopes, because I think the NCAA hopes hinged on them going 14-4. And now to go 14-4, they're going to have to upset either Florida or Ole Miss, and that's a tall order since both of those are road games. But we'll get to that in the coming weeks. Have we had a break all night yet?
No, we haven't.
I mean, I know you guys are a lot younger than me, but, you know, people in their 50s have smaller bladders than people in their 20s and 30s.
Flip and I have been rotating as you've been talking, we admit.
Yeah, well, Thomas, I see you sitting there with like an empty gallon milk jug, you know. Not leaving the board.
No.
That's horrifying. I've been peeing in Pepsi ribbon cans.
You'd be surprised how much that kind of thing goes on, like in the military on long Jeep trips, and there's no girls in the Jeep. You'd be surprised how much that goes on. I know it went on in Bosnia in 1996, I can tell you that much.
Well, let's do that.
Back when I was broadcasting for AFN Bosnia.
Sure. Let's
take a break.
Point is well taken. Let's take a quick break. Let's go ahead and throw the phone lines open. If you want to get in on our conversation, the number is 714-510-3707. We'll be right back for more BAMS Radio.
So, what makes BAMS Tailgate so darn special?
Sunbelt Inflatable Tents can supply you with custom-designed tents for your tailgate needs. Corporations, businesses,
or just the most hardcore fans are the customers of Sunbelt Inflatable Tents.
Reach them at their website, www.sunbeltinflatabletents.com, and ask for Billy. Or call 251-247-1169 to order.
Signing day on BAMS Radio. Boy, we have just about beat it into the ground, so let's take a break and change directions. One of my favorite websites for a change of pace, for a little spoonful of something different tasting, is Tower of Bammer. If you're missing out on Tower of Bammer, you're missing something great. And the current headline on Tower of Bammer is Alabama actually being run by the Prince of Darkness, and it has Saban superimposed over a heavy metal band's drum kit, and of course making fun of Coach James Franklin, positing that Alabama is currently being run by the devil himself, Nicky Satan, and just a really funny article. And then the article below that, Lance Armstrong admits to carrying around DJ Fluker head in a jar. That's pretty fantastic as well. So if you're looking for a little distraction from signing day and all the recruiting coverage, head on over to towerofbammer.com and have a laugh or two. Man, I'm pissed off that we lost to Auburn tonight. That's just terrible.
Well, but they had some fans in the student section that were holding little black and white blow-up Nick Saban heads with little red horns pasted to them in reference to what you were just speaking about.
That's pretty good.
Pretty funny.
But, you know, when he was at LSU, I heard a lot of Bammers call him Nick Satan.
Sure.
I
mean,
I get that.
It's the easy go-to. It's not creative at all. Pretty funny that a head coach in the SEC, especially somebody that I think most people consider James Franklin an up-and-coming, pretty classy guy. You know, I think a lot of people are pulling for him at Vandy. So most of us were shocked that a classless statement like that would come from somebody that everybody seems to think is on the up-and-up.
Well, I didn't take it that way at all, and I know that a lot of people did, and I know he issued an apology moments later. But all the guy was doing was cracking a joke. I can tell you that he probably regretted his statement 6 months earlier about not hiring assistants with ugly wives more than he regretted little Nicky Satan popping out of the high school banquet. The guy's just trying to be funny. I mean, he thinks he's Chris Rock or something. You know, he thinks he's Steve Harvey. But sometimes he cracks a joke and then 5 seconds later realizes, you know, I probably shouldn't have said that. And as some woman's been guilty of that most of his life, I empathize with Coach Franklin. Just saying.
Hey, I'm right there with you. I've, you know, foot into mouth more than once, sometimes on this show.
Well,
just on the show.
It is what it is, man.
Oh, no. I don't claim exclusive domain. Oh, God.
Well,
I almost feel like there's a hangover tomorrow. You know, you get this big national signing day high. You get so amped up for it. And then what do we got next?
Well,
I guess the NFL draft and A-Day.
I've got kind of a signing day sequel tomorrow. I'll be going to hear Rodney Orr speak tomorrow afternoon in Birmingham of Tighter Insider, give some interesting anecdotes. And then I will steal about half of those anecdotes along with some I gathered today and some I've shared today. And I will be heading to Huntsville, Alabama to speak at the Greenbrier Restaurant tomorrow night around 6:30 or 7 about National Signing Day. So I'll be sure to give BAMS Radio a plug tomorrow night. But I'm going to hear a speech and give a speech tomorrow about this year's class. So, it's kind of like signing day, the sequel for Kerry Clark tomorrow.
Man, it's tough being you having to just bathe in Bama all the time.
It's an interesting metaphor.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I'm going to let that one ride. I might sound like James Franklin.
Yeah, maybe the image of the heavy metal band got to me.
Well, if we want to change gears real quick, we do have a caller on the line. So,
all means, let's introduce a fresh voice to this conversation.
Marty, you are on live. How are you doing this evening?
Hey, I'm doing great. Hey, being so full of Bama as I am, it's such a privilege to be able to, you know, to listen to y'all guys on a Wednesday night. I mean, y'all do a great job, Lip and Thomas and Kerry. You know, we do appreciate it out here, what y'all are doing. Hey, I've got a little. I wanted to say that before I went on my rant. I got about four things I really just want to get off my chest.
Rant away, brother.
I'm so tired of hearing about Ole Miss. I'm sick and tired of it. I've heard it all day long. I've seen it on television all day. How in the world is a team or a school that gets the number one offensive player, an offensive tackle that had no way of getting that person to the very end there, and then signs that person. You know, it's just ridiculous. I mean, what's going on at Ole Miss? I mean, it's very obvious what's happening. You know, and the second thing is, how in the world can you have a running back of Derrick Henry who broke the high school nationwide record and not be a five-star recruit is beyond me. I just can't even comprehend that. If anybody else had recruited him and he would have been committed to him, he would have been a six-star. No, but not Alabama. He's a four-star. You know, and third thing, Lugan Barner has got to go. I mean, I'm so sick of hearing him on every recruiting show. I'm fed up with him. I mean, he's got to go. I mean, is it just me, or is everybody else feel that way, too?
No.
You know, give me Kirk Clark and Tim Watts over Logan Barner all day long.
I mean,
well,
it's
Logan Barner, you remember, Marty, do you remember what he said when Julio committed 5 years ago? Logan Barner was convinced Julio was going to Oklahoma. He had just told everybody that would listen that Julio was going to sign with Oklahoma. And when Julio signed with Alabama, Logan Barner, the first words out of his mouth, "Well, you made your bed, now lay in it." Really, Logan Barner? Because, yeah, but anyway, you had another point, Marty. I'm sorry. I just wanted to throw that in there.
Well, I mean, that, you know, the fourth thing I've got on my mind, too, is how in the hell can Texas A&M, you know, sign about 85 people in one class? I don't understand it. You know, 33 is what they're showing. I mean, are they not a limit there? I don't understand the rules so much, you know. What's going on with the over-signing crowd?
The round table today, they had one of the guys from Texas, I think he was from Dallas, on the show today talking about Texas A&M and Texas sort of reversing roles this year in recruiting. And he laughed. He said, yeah, the joke around the recruiting circles is that A&M signed 102 guys this year. So you're only off by 20 or so, Marty, when you say 80. They did sign a big class. I think a bunch of those kids are going to back count to last year's class. And just like with Coach Saban, you know, we've signed a couple of 28, 29, 30s in our time. There's attrition. There's kids transferring out. There's gray shirts. There's all sorts of ways that you can get it down to 25. And I have every confidence that Coach Sumlin is making an effort to run things above board and get it down to the right number the right way. Now, as to your first question, Kerry earlier in the show has already alluded to some stinky diapers from Oxford. And while I doubt very much that we're going to squeeze any real concrete details out of Kerry tonight, my brain first goes to, well, Oxford has got some exceptionally beautiful women. I mean, that's kind of what they're known for. New coach, Kim Dichie's brother already goes there, so Kim Dichie was kind of a lock. No matter how you broke it down, Kim Dichie was going to Ole Miss, no matter what. Top player in the country, there's a little sizzle there. And Hugh Freeze, actually, I think if I recall this, he actually tweeted a comment that kind of summed up his line, his closing pitch to all of these five-star kids. Why do you want to go to a school like Alabama and do it again to repeat what's already been done? Or would you rather come here and blaze your own trail and do something new? And, you know, to some kids, you look at that and you go, well, gee, Alabama's already winning. They know how to win. I think I'll go there and keep winning. That makes a lot of sense. But there are some kids out there that resonates with. So there are some things to me that as far as Ole Miss sex appeal, I can add it up. But I'm with you, man. There's just too much smoke. And when somebody like Kerry Clark says they're playing fast and loose, you got to stop and listen. There's something to the story that eventually is going to get out. Of course, I mean, I'm the same guy that said that Auburn was going to get burned to the ground and covered in mud for their recruiting transgressions. And look at where they are today.
Here's a couple points. I'm actually pretty pissed off about the whole Ole Miss thing, not just on Tunsil, but on Connor. There's two kids that really wanted to come to Alabama, but for various reasons were not allowed to or were not able to. I'll say a few things about it. Marty, are you still there?
I am.
I put on Twitter today that they're going to be selling a shirt this fall on the Grove, and the T-shirt's going to say, "I sold my soul for the Liberty Bowl." But where I'm going with that is, Ole Miss is doing some things that they've been on probation for in the past. This is what I'm being told from an excellent source. Okay, And I don't really give a crap who from Ole Miss is listening to this because I know what's going on, and I dare them to deny any of it. Number one, Marty, they're bringing in strippers from Memphis to a lot of the recruiting parties. And this is actually something that almost backfired with Connor because his mom is a devout Christian. And when she heard about it, it really up until midnight last night, Connor was coming to Alabama. Something changed overnight. I hesitate to guess what. But Ole Miss, Marty, they have a system set up where based on how badly they want you, they will offer cash not just to sign with them, but just to even take a visit. I mean, it's stuff that doesn't just go on at Ole Miss, and it's stuff that is extremely hard to prove. But you have to remember, Marty, Hugh Freeze learned from Ed Orgeron. And Ed Orgeron was one cheating S of a B. And, you know, everybody's giving Hugh Freeze all this praise and love for this great class he signed today. And, you know, I mean, Laramie Tunsil was just blown away by whatever offer he got while he was on his visit. And actually tried to get Alabama or Georgia to match it. And to Rick and Saban's credit, they said not just no, but, well, Rick probably said heck no, and Saban probably said hell no. So there he was, left with Ole Miss. Not true. True, Tunsil probably will start from day one at Ole Miss. We don't know that he would have at Alabama. Chances are slim. You know, it reminds me a lot of Bobby Massey's situation about 3 or 4 years ago, how Alabama thought they had him to the last second, and Ole Miss swooped in and made an offer he couldn't refuse. Well, when you have three crystal footballs sitting in your athletic building, you don't have to pay players. And when you have five or six guys drafted in the first round or second round NFL draft every year, you don't have to pay players. Ole Miss has none of that. The last time they won a national championship was 1960. That I was two, and I don't think anybody else on this call was born. Okay? And they're the only team that's never won the SEC West. That is the suckage of them. Well, I guess now you can count A&M, but I'm talking about from the original SEC West. Ole Miss is the only program that's never been to the Georgia Dome for the SEC championship game. I mean, they're just, you know, and this is, you know, they're doing some things that is going to end up, I don't know when, because I don't think they have it to the science that Auburn does. Auburn has it to a science that they may never be caught again. I don't know that Ole Miss has it to that science. But I'm going to tell you, Marty, they're treading on some thin ice, and they're ticking off a lot of people, and it's just a matter of time before somebody turns them in. And once somebody turns them in, they'll get what they got coming to them. And I'm not going to say that's going to happen in the next year or two. And I really don't think they'll match this class they got today ever again. I think this recruiting class is tantamount to Auburn's 2010 national title. It's a once-in-a-lifetime thing for Ole Miss. And they better enjoy it, because if they keep cheating the way they're cheating, somebody's going to turn them in, and when they do, it's going to get ugly. And I'll just leave it at that.
What do you think? It's the NCAA has just they're just not showing any backbone anymore with some of these schools. They've just set an example with Auburn, and now everybody, especially some of the newcomers and all, that think they can just jump on the bandwagon and do whatever they want to do, and there's no consequences to pay for it.
They probably showed too much backbone on Penn State. Then they find out the whole investigation in Miami's been botched now because NCAA. I don't think the left hand knows what the right hand's doing, Marty.
Well, don't let Bama do anything, because I guarantee they'd jump on them in a heartbeat.
Well, Bama don't have to. As long as Saban's there, Bama don't have to.
I hope not.
Well, you know, I want to expand on your point real quick, Kerry. The NCAA's enforcement and punishment has just completely destroyed itself. With the Penn State thing was bad. This Miami thing is 100 times worse because the NCAA probably had Miami lock, stock, and barrel, but they've now completely ruined their own investigation by using deposition, like using a deposition to get their, to further their investigation. What? I would love to meet the person at the NCAA that thought that was okay. And it's going to have major consequences going forward. And that's not, that's the really the tip of the iceberg with the NCAA. They've got the player lawsuit for players to gain money off using likenesses that recently got sent, is being allowed to be prosecuted. And the USC guy is probably going to win that case against that he's suing the NCAA against because the judge recently ordered all those records unsealed. It's a big, bad deal at the NCAA right now in terms of their entire enforcement model. And I know I got a little off topic, but I had to.
No, but
I
your point
to,
is good, though.
Yeah, I had to reinforce your point that it's a bad, bad deal for NCAA enforcement right now.
Yep.
I'm so glad Alabama doesn't have these problems. It makes my life so much easier and less stressful.
Well, Marty, yeah, we railed on Ole Miss so long, I forgot what your other.
Derrick Henry not being a five-star recruit is just blows my mind away. I just can't comprehend it.
Well,
you know, breaking a 12,000, you know, yard record that's been there for years and years and years, and you cannot even be a five-star recruit is. I just can't imagine it.
I'm with you, and we talked about this after the Army All-Star game, that I understand there being the speculation with the frame, the young man, the way he's built. You could look at him and think, well, at the college level, you know, his professional career is best served by moving him to linebacker. I could see why people would think that and say that. But if you watched his performance toting the rock, you know, running the ball against the best of the best in high school athletics, he was a monster in that Army game. There's no question. Anybody that watched that Army All-American game, there's no question that he was a five-star running back. And I completely agree with you that any of the sites that didn't bump him up to five-star status missed it. They just missed it.
Well, hopefully it'll
give
you motivation.
Maybe. There's really no excuse for it. I mean, it's just a poor job evaluation. I mean, I don't know. I don't. There's not any defense for it, Marty. Just a poor job evaluation.
But you know what? Let's go the other direction. Instead of harping on that, Rivals.com, when they do their evaluations, the four-star ranking comes in three tiers. You've got your 5.8, 5.9, and 6. And a 6 ranking is just 1/10 of a point away from that. You know, all the 5 stars are 6.1. There is nothing higher than 6.1 for Rivals.com. So if you earn that 6 ranking, Rivals felt like you were right there on the bubble. You were almost a 5-star. And in previous classes, Alabama signed a lot of 4-star kids, but not that many 6s. If you look at the rankings from this year, I think Bama fans need to understand that all 4 of the running backs we signed were rated 6 by Rivals.com. Henry was just a bug fart away from being a 5-star. Tenpenny was a 6 rating. Ty was just a hair away from getting that 5th star. And you know what? So was Alvin Kamara.
Yep.
All 4 of those running backs were a 6 rating and just, you know, that extra touchdown away from being 5-star elite. And that is awesome. Bama fans ought to be tickled shitless about that.
And the thing you can add about Tenpenny is, He probably should have been a five-star and would have been a five-star had he not broken his ankle his junior year.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
So,
hey, one more thing before I get off here and listen, let y'all talk. Is, you know, don't you think that Anthony Grant needs to go to the school of recruiting under Nick Saban and learn how to recruit
yes.
some players that can score some
yes.
dadgum points? I mean, that's sick and tired of looking at a product out there on the court like I've seen tonight. It gives you heartburn. I mean, it's just ridiculous. I mean, we're too good of a university to put a product like that on the court that can't score. I'll get off here, and yeah, guys, appreciate what y'all do, and I'll be listening.
Thanks, Marty.
Appreciate
Thanks for
it,
the
Marty.
Call. Part of it's Anthony's system. I mean, harken back not that long ago, we were talking about what an ugly product we were putting on the hard court. And saying, well, you know, we brought in these sharpshooters. You know, Trevor Lacy is a sharpshooter. He can just fill the bucket up. And so bringing Lacy in as a shooter, you know, that's going to fix some of the scoring problems. And Relaford being able to dish, and Cooper can shoot on the outside, and Randolph can shoot. So these outside shooters, that's going to change the style a little bit, and we're going to put more points up. And it has not happened. Here we are in the middle of those three shooters' careers at Alabama, you know, in the middle of their sophomore seasons, and it just hasn't materialized.
Other than Lacy, I think, is either second or third in the conference in three-point percent. He was pretty off tonight, though. Cooper doesn't seem to be able to hit the big ones. Relaford is one of the more improved three-point shooters in the league, and Randolph just passes up a lot of shots that I think he should take. He made a huge one against Arkansas, but I think they're afraid if they miss it, they'll be taken out of the game, and I think that just kind of affects their confidence. And tonight was bad. Particularly the second half, up 10 at the half and then lose by 12, that's pretty bad. I'm now replaying the part that I missed. I'm just going to watch it until it's 15-2, and I'm going to erase it. But it is sad that they can't be more consistent. They are pretty consistent on defense. That's really not the problem. They've been out-rebounded a lot, but they've guarded people. Their perimeter defense has come miles since Grant got there. That being said, they still got a shot to make it. I just think now they're going to have to upset either Florida or Ole Miss, or they're going to have to do some damage in Nashville in the postseason. Tonight was a costly loss to a crappy team. It's tough to win on the road, but that was one they should have won, and they didn't. And the second half was just brutal. And if you DVR'd it, don't watch the second half. I'll just tell you right now. But you know what?
I'm not. Losing to a crappy team stings, and it's there's been too much of that this season. I still am on the fence about whether or not I hang it all on Grant. I mean, recruiting wise, I mean, what do you change? What do you fix? He's brought in 4- and 5-star kids. He's recruited well. Maybe not enough. And we certainly have – Devontae Pollard certainly has not played like a 5-star kid.
No, he seems lost most of the time. He has a lot of athletic ability, but it hasn't really translated yet into basketball playing ability. He probably should have gone out and found some kind of JUCO big man. But I think he tried and just didn't find one. And he doesn't believe in signing a body that's going to spend 95% of their time sitting by him. And that's what's got all this roster management criticism coming at him. Carl Engstrom getting hurt just killed him. He had won the job of starting center at the University of Alabama to the point that it was hurting the games of Gay and Jacobs to where they kind of just slacked off. Then all of a sudden Carl gets hurt, and they have to have to demand more from Musa and Nick. They're not getting it from them every night. Some nights they are, but not every night. And if Carl hadn't got hurt and if Steele hadn't got hurt when he did, they'd probably still be okay. But it's beginning to look, after tonight, it's beginning to look more and more like an NIT team. And a lot of that is due to the poorness of the SEC this year. I don't know if SEC gets more than 3 in NCAA this year.
Yeah.
Not to say Alabama couldn't get hot and do a little bit of damage in Nashville. Alabama should be favored to win every game they play the rest of this month. They were favored tonight. They've got an extremely weak schedule the rest of February. And then the first week of March, 2 of the 3 games are very tough because 2 of the 3 games the first week of March are in Oxford and in Gainesville. Two places Alabama has not fared well. So they may close the season by losing 2 out of 3. And even if they were to win the whole rest of February, it might not be enough. They might have to go to Nashville and win another couple of games to have a shot at, you know, getting off the bubble. I just don't know. The margin for error is razor thin right now, or else we're looking at an NIT team. And that's where it stands in my book, but it also stands in the books of people that know a lot more than me, like Jerry Palm and Joe Lenardi.
Right. Well, Lenardi had us listed prior to the loss tonight as one of the last 4 out. The loss tonight's got to bump us right off of that and into the no question you're not getting in list.
I think we wouldn't even be on the first 8 out after tonight. I think we'll have to win every game we play the rest of February to get back on the bubble. And that's a possibility. Because the SEC is so down, and we don't play any of the good teams until March. And then 2 of our 3 March games before the tournament, and I mean the SEC tournament, are against 2 of the best teams in the league. And they're both on the road. And Florida and Ole Miss will most likely administer severe spankings. Although Ole Miss is starting to show a little bit of they lost one of their best inside reserves the other day for the season to a knee. So Ole Miss is starting to show a little bit of fallibility. Nobody saw Florida losing to Arkansas the way they did last night, but that was a road game. Florida doesn't play that way at home. That never happens in Gainesville. So Alabama's in for a severe beating in Gainesville the first week of March. The Oxford game now has pretty much become a must-win, and it's going to be tough to do it. But they're going to have to find a way unless they want those extra 1 or 2 home games in the NIT, which they don't. They want to make the tournament this year, so obviously that's just about saying so. But, you know, they just got to find a way to be more consistent on offense. I don't think defense has been the problem, but they've got to find a way to be more consistent on offense. They're just not getting it done every half like they have to.
Thomas, I think we've got a question from the chat room.
Absolutely. Not to jump back on signing day, but that's a little happier than basketball. from the chat room, one of our guys wants to know who we think the panel are. We think the scariest class from today, besides Alabama. I don't really have one that I'm afraid of. I think Ole Miss is a one-off. And everyone else did basically what I expected them to. So I'm not afraid of anything that came into Alabama's sphere of influence in terms of, you know, who Alabama will have to see once or twice a year in football. What about you guys?
I mean, Florida had a good class. SEC-wise, if you were guessing who Alabama's opponent would be in the SEC championship game the next 3 to 5 years, you'd probably say Florida, not Georgia.
I agree there. Georgia really screwed the pooch in this recruiting class this now just completed cycle.
In fact, the only reason that I think Georgia might have one more shot at Alabama is the decision of Aaron Murray to come back for senior year, which was a good decision, by the way. But the East is going to be tough again. You know, South Carolina's going to be tough. I wasn't blown away by South Carolina's class today. I did hear a smart-ass comment by Spurrier. Imagine that. saying
no.
Something to the effect of sometimes your class just doesn't work out the way you want it to, but things always seem to pan out over to Alabama.
Wow.
Whatever, Steve.
Well,
He's not jealous.
I'll go the opposite. I'm with you, Kerry, in that if as far as who we have to play in the foreseeable, you know, Ohio State had a nice class. Notre Dame had a nice class, but they're not on our immediate radar. Florida, I can dismiss Ole Miss's excellent class simply because I think that they're going to have a lot of those true freshmen play. Florida brought in a superb class, satisfied all of their needs, are adding that class to an already talented roster. I think Florida became a lot more dangerous in the East today, but I'm going to go the opposite direction. I'm going to answer the inverse of your question. I think that one of the interesting stories of signing day is Mizzou. Mizzou finished 48th in the nation. You know, everybody wants to talk about the impact that moving to the SEC has had for Texas A&M. Texas A&M had an exceptional class, finishing 10th in the country, 15 four-stars, 15 three-stars, signed 31 total. Huge class, full of talent. Aggie fans should be to the moon. The inverse of that occurred with Mizzou, where they signed one four-star, 17 three-stars, a total of 20. You know, where is that shiny that we're supposed to see for moving to the SEC? Mizzou shit the bed for signing day. Big time.
I just think that they have a very good recruiting staff at Missouri. But, you know, back to that scariest question, you know, based on who we got to play, you'd have to mention A&M in there.
Yeah.
I mean, they got better today.
I think Florida and A&M are the two big ones. LSU had so much talent leave this year, so much junior and senior talent. I think LSU is about to fall back into rebuilding, not reloading, but rebuilding. Whereas I think Florida had a reloading class.
I think LSU is probably looking at about a 9-4 season.
Yeah,
some friends of mine over in the LSU athletic department have candidly said they expect nine almost ceiling of 10 wins from LSU this upcoming year, just because there is so much turnover.
I think the 10th would have to come in the ballgame if they get 10.
Or, like, upsetting Florida or something. I don't – I understand where you're going.
I doubt it.
I agree.
Well, the West ought to be interesting. I mean, outside of Alabama, this past season, there was a genuine dogfight as far as the top two or three spots. I mean, Alabama, LSU, both were exceptionally talented. A&M came in and made some noise. This year, I just don't see anybody in the West with the talent to challenge Alabama. I mean, it's the interesting fight in the West will be for number two, and I don't know who I would give the nod to right now. I mean, obviously A&M will be the sexy pick, but LSU, Ole Miss, Auburn, I mean, all three of those squads were in the top 10 in recruiting. Who knows what Gus is going to do down there on the plains?
Auburn could make a big run at number two, but it's squarely on the shoulders of Nick Marshall, the JUCO quarterback they have. Gus Malzahn's system needs a really good quarterback to excel. And if Marshall can come in, figure it out, lock in the job, I think Auburn could be a much improved team. But if Marshall even has a slight step back, then Auburn's going to have a real tough time. If you ask me, I think the co-defensive coordinator thing is laughable, and I have never seen it actually work. But you know they're going to be able to – Auburn will be able to outscore some teams.
Well, you immediately dismissed Jeremy Johnson. I mean, of all the kids that they brought in this class, I thought Johnson was one of the most impressive.
Well, I don't mean to dismiss Jeremy Johnson. I'm saying that I can buy a JUCO transfer playing a lot more than a true freshman playing. Can Johnson come in and do it? Sure, he can. I just, if I had to hedge my bets, I would go with Nick Marshall, personally.
Marshall was a cornerback at Georgia, Thomas.
Yeah, I know. He threw.
Not going through the spring. I mean, coming out of spring, the starter is going to be Jonathan Wallace. Now, when Jeremy Johnson gets there and Nick Marshall gets there, then they'll be pushing. And then Kyle Frazier's still there. God bless his Cody Burns Jr. soul.
He went there.
I do. I have to go there once a week. It's just, I don't know what to say. Nick Marshall and Jeremy Johnson, neither one are going through the spring. And that makes a big difference for a quarterback trying to pick up a new offense. It just does. And I know they'll probably learn things over the summer and watch film and study the playbook, but they're only going to have a month to really learn the offense and pads. And really more like 3 weeks. So, I mean, Nick Marshall, like I said, he was a cornerback at Georgia. He played a year in junior college as quarterback. Jeremy Johnson is, you don't want to say a young Cam Newton, but he's certainly a young Jason Campbell. He's going to be very good. I don't know if it's going to be this freshman year or not, but Jeremy Johnson is going to win some ball games for the University of Auburn.
Here's an interesting National Signing Day storyline. I would challenge either one of you to name the last time that Vanderbilt signed a class rated higher than Tennessee.
Never.
I don't know that it's ever happened, and yet this year, there you have it. Vandy at 19, Tennessee at 20.
It really, really hurt Tennessee not getting Von Bell. It didn't hurt Alabama not getting Von Bell. Fact of the matter is, Alabama pulled Von Bell's offer about a week ago. They got tired of waiting on him. And Alabama's evaluation of Von Bell was, you can help us, but you would never be a starter in anything but a dime package. You would never be one of our four starting defensive backs. You might even work your way up to the nickel, which we do play a lot of, but you would never be one of our four deep when we went to our base defense. And when they figured that out, and he kept wanting to hold off on his commitment, Alabama just backed off of Von Bell. He didn't have an Alabama option today. He didn't get an Alabama LOI in the mail. He probably thought he was going to, but he didn't. So everybody thought, well, he's going to go to Tennessee because he's been a lifetime Tennessee fan, but somehow Urban weaseled his way in there and got him.
Good
for Urban. Who cares?
That does explain the tweet that Von Bell sent out saying that he's going to help Ohio State beat Alabama for a Crystal football that caused much grinning and, you know, laughter amongst Bama fans through the day.
You know what? It would suit me just fine if that's who we played in Pasadena.
I'd have no problem with it. Alabama would win by 30.
I would love to see that game for the reason you just named, for the arrogance of that conference, and for the dipstick that calls Feinbaum, Andy from Perrysburg, Ohio, big Ohio State guy, big anti-oversigning guy. Of course, Alabama only signed 25 today, so I guess Andy won't be able to hark on that. But it would tickle me to death if Ohio State was the opponent in Pasadena next year. I think that'd be wonderful for all of football. They get a big dose of what Notre Dame got.
Pregnant pause.
The last, and we're coming down the home stretch for the show. I thought Florida State closed very well today with the flip of Jalen Ramsey, who had been committed to USC. Five-star linebacker Matthew Thomas, who. Kind of an interesting story. It sounds like, and Kerry, you may have a little more insight on this. It sounds like Saban had an in-home visit lined up with Thomas. That visit never occurred. Am I right on that?
I don't think it did. that situation isn't night and day different than the Von Bell situation. Matthew Thomas didn't really fit in a 3-4 defense. He didn't really have a position. He would have struggled to ever start a game in Alabama. Probably would have gotten some time on third down. But now he's going to go somewhere where he's got a chance to be a starter on the defense and contribute and be on TV. And yeah, it was a case of a wonderful football player that really wasn't a fit for the University of Alabama. Very, very similar to Von Bell, really.
Yeah. So Florida State closes today with Jalen Ramsey, Matthew Thomas, of course, DeMarcus Walker, who at one point was committed to Alabama, and Marquez White, who Alabama had flirted with the entire recruiting process and just never came to terms with. So there's four players that I think that Bama would have maybe liked to have had evaluated and looked at, that all ended up going to Florida State. So the accusation that Jimbo Fisher is trying to be Nick Saban Jr., I think, is a fitting one in this particular recruiting class. It's State ended up closing nicely, and that's another team I would not mind seeing meet with some success in this upcoming season, and us seeing them in Pasadena. I would love to match up against that Florida State squad.
I would like that just because Jimbo needs a little Saban woodshed treatment for the manner he's recruited a couple of kids. He needs a little bit of whipping, but the similarities of Nick Saban and Jimbo Fisher are far more prevalent on National Signing Day than they are on game day. Let me just say that.
Well,
unless
that's
you want to use the excuse that NC State was his Bob Monroe, but he had a lot more talent than Nick Saban did when Nick Saban lost to Bob Monroe. Nick Saban had all those shooter perks left over and all that. So, I think Jimbo is a much better recruiter than he is game day guy. I don't know that he'll ever make the BCS title game. He may come close. He may make it
well,
once.
Look at the staff he's put together.
But all going to be a regular
Jeremy visit. Pruitt, you know, Sinceri, former Bama guys.
Yeah, the staff turnover is going to be interesting this year.
Yeah. It would be fun, I admit. It would be fun to play them in Pasadena. I wouldn't have a problem with it, but we would thrash them. I'm just never – even though he's no longer on his staff, I'm just never going to forgive Jimbo for – the way he allowed Damian Craig to recruit Jameis Winston, the way he allowed him to continue to play the race card and all that. I'll never forgive Jimbo for that. So anyway, it would be fun to play them because they definitely deserve a Saban beatdown, no question about it. But either them or Ohio State, if it's Alabama versus Ohio State or Florida State and Pasadena, that'd be great. Great and wonderful. Really wouldn't want to play anybody else. Those are the two best choices. I'm glad you brought that up.
Well, it's interesting that you brought up the national championship in Pasadena. Apparently through the whatever the promotion is where you can buy BCS championship tickets early, that went on sale either today or yesterday, and Alabama's prospecting price has already doubled. So, I mean, obviously early money is on Alabama to go to the Rose Bowl. So just interesting factoid for fans.
I should add to the end of that statement, again.
Yeah, again, thank you.
Alabama should go to the Rose Bowl again. Sorry.
Yeah, and it's the whole discussion about Alabama going back there centers around the fact that both AJ and CJ decided to come back for their senior years. Had both those guys bolted, I don't think Alabama's in the Pasadena discussion. I don't even know that they're in the New Orleans discussion. But those guys coming back made all the difference in the world and made a three-peat very possible and a 4 out of 5 very possible. So shout out to AJ and CJ for listening to those they consulted with about possibly turning pro and doing, you know, what was best for them long-term and what was certainly best for the University of Alabama's chances at three-peating.
AJ, CJ, TJ. Let's sprinkle a little TJ in there, too. Come on now.
Well, TJ wasn't going anywhere, but my point was the return of those two guys. We all know TJ's a stud. And certainly can't blame DJ for leaving. His stock is going up very much so. Good for DJ. Going to be an interesting battle at right tackle. That's something else I'm looking for day to day. Is who's going to be the right tackle? A lot of people assume it's going to be Leon Brown. And it might be. And, you know, one thing, I was still in queue when you guys talked about Brandon Hill. He actually reported a couple weeks ago at 4:06.
Really?
That's a big mamma jamma.
As of today, Coach Cochran has him down to 390, but that is still a work in progress, and he knows that. But, yeah, he showed up first week of January at 4:06.
It's a big
boy. When you're 6'6", that's a little much, even for a right tackle. So he's down to 390 as of his interview today. He was one of the guys that spoke to me today as well. He's down to 390 now. He's dropped 16 in a couple of weeks. And Coach Cochran's got a plan for him. And Amy, the dietitian, she's got a plan for him. And Coach Saban, of course, has a plan for him. Coach Stoutland is actually very thrilled to get him, I understand. I understand Coach Stoutland is willing to look at him at either tackle. We've all got him pigeonholed for right tackle, but my understanding is Coach Stoutland was looking on both sides and didn't figure out where he can play. He apparently played a lot of left tackle in prep school. So that shows his versatility, and it shows he's an athlete, but I still see him as a right tackle. And there's some talk of maybe somebody in the group of signees might end up being a guard, who knows. Austin Shepherd, to me, performed admirably at right tackle every time the second offensive line went in. But there's also some talk of possibly trying him at guard in an effort to get the best five guys on the field. I don't know how that's going to work out. I think Ari Quandro will get a shot at starting. And it's going to be a really interesting. I think Vic Shank will have a shot. Alphonse Taylor, who redshirted this year, he'll have a shot to start at one of the guards. It's going to be an inexperienced offensive line. But it's certainly not going to be an untalented offensive line. It's going to be five studs. I just don't know which five it's going to be right now.
And you think Ryan Kelly has that center position locked up?
I do. Oh, yes, I do. Yes, Ryan Kelly is thought of in the same terms of the redshirt freshman version of Barrett Jones. It's just that when Barrett was a redshirt freshman, he had to play. They didn't have any guards that were worth, you know, he had to play. And he got better every year and won awards like that. But Ryan Kelly is a true center that has the same football IQ of the 19-year-old Barrett Jones and understands the calling of the defenses. And Barrett's had a lot of good things to say about Ryan Kelly. And Ryan was a popular guy down there at Media Day and even after the game in the locker room was opened up. A lot of guys wanted to talk to Ryan. He's a well-spoken young man and a very intelligent young man. But, yes, I'm telling you, Ryan Kelly will be the center. And I understand that Steen is probably not going to swap sides. There have been some talk of moving Steen over to the left side to play with Cyrus so he could run left a lot. But my understanding is that they're going to leave Steen on the right side so that he can help tutor whoever the new right tackle is. And this will probably be the last year we have Cyrus. So somebody's got to be groomed to be the next left tackle. And I may have had a Freudian slip there. It may be Brandon Green that ends up being the second team left tackle. Brandon Green impressed a lot of people on the scout team this year. And he's built like the prototypical left tackle, as is Cyrus. But, yeah, Ryan Kelly is definitely going to be the center. I just don't even know of anybody that's going to push him. I really don't.
Lua,
I don't know if he's going to be a center or a guard when it's all said and done. That's a good question, though. I don't really hear much about young Isaac. I hear more about his brother, who's going to be a senior this fall, the outstanding tight end from La Mirada, Cali. I hear much more about his younger brother than I do him, to be frank with you.
Well, it sucks to be a Bama fan right now. I mean, have all these problems with, you know, all these talented 4-star, 5-star offensive linemen trying to figure out who's going to end up where. tough, man.
I need to know who the tight end's going to be. I don't think I've ever seen a kid improve his blocking in as short a time as I have Brian Vogler. He was killing people in the bowl game.
Well, that's, you talked about O.J. O.J. filling that sort of Brad Smelly tight end spot. I think they're going to get good mileage out of Vogler and out of Freitag.
Well, yeah, I think Freitag will probably be more of the true tight end. There's talk of, well, the coaches really want to see long-term what Brent Callaway can do at H-back as well. And they also want to have the option, which they do because they're the coaches, of moving Jostin Fowler to H-back at times. I think Jostin Fowler is going to play like three positions next year. I really do. I think he's going to be a H-back sometimes, a fullback sometimes, and a tailback sometimes. I think he's going to have a lot of roles. You know, I like the idea of Jostin Fowler leading Derrick Henry through the hole.
That's what I was about to ask you for a jumbo package. Jostin Fowler leading Henry.
It's just not fair.
I don't know if jumbo is even a good enough word for that.
That's nasty.
The jumbo package makes me cringe a little bit because I think of Castile and getting stopped on short yardage all those times. I always wonder what it would have been like if they'd have done what they should have done, which was having Tim Castile lead LaRon McClain through the hole.
Uh-huh.
I think they'd have made a few first downs. I think they certainly would have beaten Tennessee. That year they lost in, five overtimes. I think they'd have won that game.
That game just about put me in the frickin' hospital.
Yeah, it ticked a lot of people off.
Well, you know what,
anyway,
guys? The show has flown by tonight. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And, you know, we could probably go another hour just talking to Kerry about hypotheticals on the O-line and D-line, but we'll save that for another show as well as talking about recruiting. I know that Bama Bird has a line on some pretty interesting potential interviews coming up here, so keep an eye on the website for that. The chat room, I should mention, bamsradio.com, our chat room today was super, super fun. Great to see everybody in the chat room today. Really had lively chat and people in and out of there all day long. So thanks to everybody for signing in for chat today on signing day. Hope to keep everybody around and engaged in the conversation about Alabama athletics. We're right up against the end of the show. So parting shots, Kerry and Thomas.
Well, anybody in the 256, that can, please come out to the Greenbrier Restaurant tomorrow night around 6:30 and get you some good barbecue or catfish, and we'll have a very similar discussion about recruiting and the team and all that. I'll be the speaker. It should be fun. Looking forward to heading up to Huntsville tomorrow night.
If you're around the Mobile area, you can pass through my old high school, my old stomping grounds, McGill-Tulin. Their basketball team is currently rocking it, and there might be a guy coming to Alabama. I believe his name is Antonio Lang. He's going to catch some interest, that's for sure. And you'll actually get to see some decent basketball in this state.
Ouch. Ouch. Well, gentlemen, it has been an honor and a privilege, as usual. Another number one nationally ranked high school signing class for the Alabama Crimson Tide. Really, not a lot of additional superlatives that we can add other than wow. Just wow at the staff. For all the people like Kerry who cover Alabama for a living and write all the articles on the websites and provide us the inside information and the insight into the back channel stuff going on that we all crave. Tremendous job today from all of the websites and all the coverage. I think Alabama fans are a little bit spoiled in that regard. You just don't get that from other schools and other websites. Not that I pay $10 a month to look at, you know, Auburn's website or anything like that, but we get the best of the best, Bama fans, and of that there is no doubt.
Well, Good way to close it out. Y'all have a good evening. This is BAMS Radio. Catch us next week.
Roll Tide.